Chapter 11. The train ride from Seattle to Georgia entailed many transfers. With each new transfer, more men on their way to Fort Benning joined, and soon they'd bunched up together and learned who was trying to be paratroopers. Gil and Clyde stuck together and made the correct transfers, which eventually led them to the final train ride into Columbus, Georgia. As they exited, the loudspeaker told them to move right and report in at the waiting buses. Clyde got his first look at a real paratrooper. Two of them stood holding clipboards, checking men off their lists as they filed onto the buses. They were unmistakable, wearing their silver jump wings and bloused pants tucked into their high jump boots. Their athleticism shone through, and they exuded confidence. Clyde gulped, wondering what he'd gotten into. He tried to imagine himself as one of them and couldn't. He'd always been in decent physical shape, but he'd never pushed his body to its full potential. He'd never had to. In high school, he'd competed in long-distance running, but he never strove to win. He just enjoyed running. His coach tried to push him, but grew frustrated with Clyde's willingness to remain in the middle of the pack, and he finally gave up trying. Clyde hauled himself and his duffel onto the bus and watched the red dirt and clay of Georgia roll by as sweat dripped off his nose. The early March weather wasn't unpleasant. He'd heard horror stories about the summer months, but hoped it wouldn't be a factor in the spring. Warmer than Seattle, but not intolerable. Not yet. The bus stopped at the front gate of Fort Benning. A bored-looking guard approached, and the bus driver handed him the manifest. The gate lifted, and the bus trundled onto the sprawling base in a lurch of belching black smoke. Clyde watched the gate close behind the last bus and couldn't shake the feeling of impending doom. Clyde watched in fascination as they passed perfectly manicured streets and countless nondescript buildings that all looked the same. The deeper into the base they drove, the bigger the buildings became. Brick predominated, and some looked very old. Everyone's attention turned to a massive tower on the skyline. Gil pointed and said, "That thing's 250 feet up." "How do you know?" Clyde asked. Gil looked annoyed. "I read the pamphlet, stupido." As the bus turned, they saw more of the massive steel towers emerge. Smaller towers with lines attached also dotted the area. Clyde pointed. "Look at that. Half an airplane. Mock-up of a C-47. We'll be jumping out of one someday," Gil said. The bus finally stopped in front of a row of brand-new, albeit temporary-looking, barracks. The black tar-paper walls shone in the sun. The paratrooper who'd ridden with them sprang to his feet and barked, "These are your barracks for the next few weeks. 20 men to each. Get out, choose a bunk, and wait for further instructions." Compared to the well-established brick buildings making up most of Fort Benning, these smallish wooden buildings felt hurried, as though they wouldn't be needed for long. It reminded Clyde that the idea of the paratrooper soldier in the U.S. Army was still in its infancy. He wondered if it would make it through to adulthood, or even into adolescence. Clyde flung his bag onto the first unoccupied bunk he came to and sat down on the mattress. The inside looked even more Spartan than the barracks back in Fort Lewis. The smell of fresh tar paper and glue hung heavily inside. He wondered if they could open a window and air the place out a little, but felt too nervous to try. Other men put their clothes into footlockers and hung coat uniforms in the wall lockers, being sure the left shoulder faced outward and the hook side of the hanger faced inward. At least they taught them that much at Fort Lewis. Clyde hustled to put his clothes away, then made the bed to Army specifications. A few minutes later, a sergeant who looked like he'd been chipped from granite entered the barracks and shouted, "Attention!" Clyde and the others bolted to their feet and stood at attention. A lieutenant strode confidently into the room. The sergeant followed close behind. In their paratrooper uniforms, they looked impressive. Clyde felt a flash of envy. Would he be able to achieve that sort of confidence? He felt wholly out of place and once again doubted his decision. The lieutenant's crisp uniform with the sparkling silver jump wings over the left breast looked impressive. They'd been traveling on trains for days, and none of their Class A's looked even remotely as good. All the paratroopers he'd seen so far looked nearly identical, physically fit and sharp. Would he fit the mold? Would he have what it took? "At ease, men. Have a seat," Lieutenant said. He waited for them to settle. He remained standing and said, Welcome to Fort Benning. Basic training, A phase, starts tomorrow at 0400 hours. You have volunteered for airborne training. To prepare you, the next 10 weeks of basic training will be tougher than anything you've attempted before in your pathetic young lives. This isn't like regular Army basic training. Paratroopers must be able to withstand the rigors of combat in the worst environments possible, after jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. He slapped his hand for emphasis. You need to be committed. You need to be sharpened to a knife's edge. You need to be the fittest soldiers on the battlefield, or you will fail. You are all volunteers. You may quit at any time. If you quit before the second week, no one will hold it against you. In other words, quit during the first week, and you'll be reassigned with no hard feelings. Quit after the first week. He gave them an evil grin and held up a finger. You'll be required to sign a quit slip, and that'll follow you through the rest of your miserable Army career. You'll spend the rest of the week serving the non-quitters in the mess hall. You'll clean the latrines and showers, too. KP duty is for quitters! He shouted the last part. After the 10 weeks, you will spend another 3 weeks in airborne training, but most of you won't make it to that phase. Most of you will fail over the next 10 weeks. If you're smart, you'll quit during the first week and avoid some unpleasant duty. He paced, letting that sink in. The few who make it to the full 10 weeks will move on to jump training. I don't expect to see too many of you there, though. We are highly selective, and if you don't perform, if you half-ass it, we'll find you and run you out of this battalion. He leveled his hard gaze at them. You give us 100% all the time, and we'll get along just fine. Blaring whistles and paratroopers shouting through bullhorns woke them all to a nightmare promptly at 4 a.m. Clyde bolted upright, totally confused. He'd been too nervous to sleep until just a few hours before the wake-up call. Shouting and cursing filled the barracks. The training cadre rousted men too slow to react by flipping their bunks over as though they weighed nothing. By the time they dressed and made it out to the muster area, 6 men had already quit. Paratroopers continued yelling through bullhorns, and whistles blared, creating more confusion. Finally, each of the 8 barracks' complements stood in relatively straight rows. Bright floodlights lit the area in stark white light. Clyde felt cold seep into him, and he shivered. Coming from the northwest, he never thought he'd be cold in Georgia. He didn't stay cold for long. A loud yell and the chaos stopped as though someone had thrown on a light switch. A single paratrooper stood ramrod straight in front of each group. They wore khaki pants bloused over their shiny paratrooper boots. Emblazoned on their tight-fitting t-shirts were the parachute wings of the airborne. A sergeant barked, Right! Face! They pivoted. Forward! Hatch! A few steps later, they were running. And they didn't stop running until the sun rose a few hours later. By the time they made it back to the muster area, 6 more men had opted out. Clyde considered it, but he didn't like the self-satisfied sneers the paratroopers gave to those that quit. Besides, Fort Lewis had hardened his body and built his stamina. He could handle more, but how much more? Clyde bent over and gasped for air. His legs shook with exhaustion. One of the training cadre yelled, Stand up straight! Form ranks and arms length apart! Now! None of the paratroopers even breathed hard. A paratrooper dropped to his hands, keeping his arms straight and his back level as he spoke to them in normal, unhurried tones. This is the resting leaning position. You will learn this position. You will live in this position. He lowered his taut body within millimeters of the ground and stopped. His precision reminded Clyde of some kind of machine. He yelled, This is the down position! Note my arms are horizontal with the ground! He pushed himself back up with a snappy motion. Notice my locked elbows! This is a proper push-up! You will learn this technique! He jumped to his feet and barked, Resting leaning position! Go! The men assumed the position and held themselves as steady as possible. Clyde felt his arms quaking within seconds, and he hadn't even done a push-up yet. He'd done plenty of push-ups at Fort Lewis, but this felt different somehow. The demonstrating paratrooper yelled, "Recover, shit for brains!" They got to their feet and went into stiff attention. "When you hear that command, leaning rest position, you drop like your goddamn legs have been cut out from beneath you. I don't care if you're standing over one of them nasty alligators. You drop!" He paced a few steps, then repeated the order. "Leaning rest position! Go!" This time, everyone instantly dropped. Appeased, he said, "Ready! Exercise! 1, 2, 3. 1, 1, 2, 3. 2, 1, 2, 3. 3. Count with me." The men got the gist of it, and soon they called out the count as best they could. When they hit 25, the sergeant finally ordered, "Recover!" The training cadre sprang to their feet as though gravity had no effect on them. The trainees moved much slower. "When you hear recover, you recover fast, goddammit!" he blared. "Leaning rest position!" The men dropped, and they went through another 25 push-ups. This time, when he gave the recover order, Clyde shot to his feet even though every part of his body ached. Clyde's arms quaked and sweat poured off him. His shoulders burned, and he wondered if he'd hurt himself. He doubted he could do another push-up even if they pointed a gun at his head. At least his leg pain had taken a back seat now. "Time to hit the barracks, men! Shower, shave, mess hall! Report back here at 0800 hours!" He grinned. "Our day is just getting started. Anyone want to quit? You can do so now and save yourselves a lot of pain and agony." No one stepped out of line. "Dismissed," he said with a hint of disappointment. The men broke ranks and dazedly moved toward the barracks 50 yards distant. The sergeant turned purple and his neck veins popped out like fat worms. He boomed, "You run! You never walk!" The cadre descended on them like lions on injured water buffalo. They berated them all the way to the front doors of each barracks building. They didn't follow them inside, but yelled and kicked their butts until they disappeared inside. Clyde went to his bunk and sat on the edge. He rubbed his hand through his sweat-soaked stubble of hair. Mud and dust clung to him like soot. He wanted to lie down, but knew he'd never get up again. He forced himself back to his feet and stumbled toward the showers. Showered and shaved, the men trotted to the mess hall. Stunned into silence, they shoveled food, hardly tasting what they ate. Clyde thought about quitting, but decided he'd just see if he could make it to lunchtime. That seemed like a reasonable goal. The first week ended. Everyone realized the grace period for dropping out without having a mark on their service record had passed. Now if they dropped, they'd have to sign the quit slip and pay penance as KP workers for the rest of the 10 weeks. After that, who knows what would happen to them, but it probably wouldn't be anything good. The week had been difficult. Clyde considered quitting many times, but just kept telling himself to get to the next meal. He and Gil helped each other as often as possible, motivating one another to stay the course. They just finished their morning run. Clyde stood with a towel around his waist, about to head into the shower. The front door suddenly burst open, and 5 paratroopers barged in with billy clubs and bad attitudes. "Stand at attention in front of your racks, shit for brains! Spot inspection!" Clyde hustled to his bunk and stood at attention. He exchanged a smug glance with Gil. They'd expected an inspection and had woken up early and worked on their areas, making sure they were perfectly squared away. The clothes in their closets hung perfectly, the clothes in their footlockers folded sharply and stacked meticulously. Nothing out of place and nothing unseemly. They'd even checked one another's gear, knowing fresh eyes sometimes caught something new. The cadre went through each soldier's gear. A few minor infractions brought their ire, but by the time they got to Clyde, they hadn't found too much to gripe about. The sergeant looked at Clyde, standing in only his towel. He inspected the bed and found nothing out of place. "Enjoying yourself, Cooper?" he growled. "Yes, Sergeant!" "Open your footlocker." Clyde knelt, unlatched the footlocker, and stepped back, careful to keep his towel tightly wrapped. The sergeant gazed inside, then darted a hand to the bottom and pulled out a magazine. The sergeant's face turned an ugly purple. He screamed, "What the hell is this, Cooper?" He waved it in his face as though he'd found a bag of shit. Clyde had never seen the magazine before. He side-glanced at Gil before answering.
I don't know, Sergeant!
The sergeant pressed it into his face.
Can you see it better now, Cooper? Do you recognize it now? No, Sergeant. I've never seen it before. Damn it, Cooper! It's in your footlocker, for Christ's sake!
Two other paratroopers quickly surrounded him and barked and yelled incoherently. Clyde's head spun. Finally, he heard,
Leading rest position! Go!
Relieved that the yelling in his ears might stop, he dropped into push-up position.
Knockout 50! Go!
The yelling didn't stop as he pushed them out, but at least it wasn't directly into his ears now.
Recover!
He shot to his feet and noticed his bed and the contents of his footlocker had been torn apart as they looked for more infractions. Finding nothing else, they surrounded him, their arms crossed over their chests, glaring at him. The sergeant pointed at the scattered clothes and bedsheets and said,
Get this cleaned up before chow, Cooper! I'm coming back to check on you in 30 minutes! Yes, sergeant!
He yelled as loudly as possible. The cadre left, and Clyde deflated. He gave Gil a withering glance, then got to work cleaning things up. Gil came over and helped him. Clyde couldn't keep the anger out of his voice.
What the hell, Gil? Did you put that there? Is this your idea of a joke or something?
Gil looked hurt, then angry.
I didn't put it there, Paisano. It definitely wasn't there this morning. I've never seen it before. Well, then how the hell did it get there? I've never seen it before either.
He looked around at the others, but no one paid any attention to them. Everyone busily tended to their toiletries.
Who the hell would do something like that?
He asked.
Maybe the drill sergeant planted it there.
Clyde shook his head as he tucked and retucked the corner of his bedding. They made up infractions at the beginning, but I thought they were over that. Besides, I know he didn't have anything in his hand. I would have seen that. Gil picked up the magazine and thumbed through it.
Actually, I have seen this before.
Clyde looked intrigued, and Gil said,
In the rec room the other night, I saw Gantry with it, I think.
Gantry?
Yeah, the tall kid from B section. Hangs out with Quinn a lot.
Why the hell would he put his magazine in my footlocker? I've never said a word to the guy.
You sure?
Gil shrugged.
Not really.
3 weeks into their 10 weeks, and Clyde's body still ached all over. He tried to shut the pain out, but his feet hurt too badly to ignore. He didn't know the distance of their daily morning runs, but guessed at least 6 miles. He plodded along in the middle of the pack, trying to keep from limping and drawing unwanted attention to himself. Ever since his inspection failure, that had been harder than normal. Behind them, an ambulance trundled along, ready to pick up anyone that dropped out. The first few days, there'd been too many to count, but now, most of them had acclimated to the abuse. At least a little. Besides Gil, he hardly knew any of the other trainees' names. The instructors worked them constantly, leaving very little time for socializing. Besides, it made little sense to get to know anyone, since they might be gone the next day or even the next few minutes. Quitting now meant they had to sign an official quit slip. A few men had done so, and they now served them in the mess hall. Clyde noticed that they never looked the men still struggling through training in the eye. Shame hung off their shoulders like Georgia mud. The run finally ended at the start of the obstacle course. One of the tanned demigods stood in front of them with his fists clenched, planted on his hips. He hadn't even broken a sweat yet. He raised his voice.
You've all been through this course. This time, we'll time you.
Two other paratroopers stood holding stopwatches and clipboards.
First up is Wilkins, John T.
A short but stout soldier stepped forward. He spit into his palms, then rubbed them on his trousers. He nodded toward the instructor.
Ready? Go!
Wilkins shot from the start and attacked the first obstacle. One paratrooper trotted nearby and motivated him to move faster. Clyde noticed more cadre ready to help motivate the others. Soon they called his name.
Cooper! Clyde S!
Clyde went to the starting point and nodded his readiness.
Ready? Go!
Clyde trotted out and went across the first obstacle, a row of wooden hurdles of various heights. He rolled over them easily and trotted to the next obstacle, a vertical wall with a thick rope attached to the top. The instructor stayed silent throughout, but followed closely. Clyde fought the temptation to push too hard, too fast. He'd seen plenty of fired-up trainees try that, and by the end of this grueling course, many collapsed in exhaustion. Slow and steady won the race, he told himself as he low-crawled beneath barbed wire and crabbed-walked through long, muddy puddles. By the time he got to the rope climb, he felt good. He hadn't pushed himself yet and had plenty of energy to haul himself up the rope and tap the red tape at the top. He carefully lowered himself and continued through the rest of the obstacles with relative ease. The instructor beside him pressed the stopwatch as he passed the finish line. He wrote something on his clipboard and grunted. He hadn't said a word the entire time, and Clyde didn't know what to make of it. It worried him, though. He wanted to ask about his time, but didn't dare. Asking questions only drew their attention and usually their ire. While waiting for the others to finish, Clyde rested. Some trainees moved along the course, encouraging their fellow trainees. The last man finally finished, and the instructor who'd started them out shouted, "Form a semicircle around me!" Clyde and the others crammed in and listened. He collected the sheets of papers with their times and compared them to another set of times. They hadn't told them they'd collected earlier times. They read off times, and when they got to Clyde's, said, "First time through the course, 10 minutes and 15 seconds. This time, 12 minutes, 30 seconds. A few of the other numbers read as slower the second time through, but most didn't. Clyde thought nothing of it. The 12:30 time would be easy to improve upon. He hadn't been pushing himself for that exact reason. The instructor's calm demeanor suddenly changed. He read off the names of trainees who hadn't improved. Gil and Clyde were on the list. They'd talked and agreed upon the strategy a few weeks earlier. "You six stand. The rest of you sit down and relax." Clyde felt dread descend upon him. They had singled them out, and that couldn't be good. "I told you we'd find you. I told you the first day. If you didn't give 100%, we'd know about it and make you pay. You shitbirds will sign your quit slips today. I'm gonna personally make sure of that." Clyde glanced nervously at the others. None of them made a move to quit. Clyde's mind reeled. Being put on KP for the rest of the war might not be so bad. With that kind of a blot on his record, he might never leave the States, let alone enter combat. He'd be labeled a malingerer, a loser, a persona non grata. But he'd be alive at the end. He'd go back to Abby and start the rest of his life with her. Hell, he'd never tell her about his failure. No one had to know. He served his country when called. No one could hold that against him. He felt something growing deep in his soul. All the pain he'd endured, all the times he'd thought about quitting and all the times he'd told himself to just see if he could make it to the next meal, had gotten him to this point. His body hurt constantly, but less and less each day as he grew stronger. He wanted to see how far he could take it. He wanted to make it. He didn't want to quit. He suddenly wanted those silver jump wings more than anything he'd ever wanted in his life. If he could do that, he could go through the rest of his life proud and happy. For the next 3 hours, Clyde suffered more pain than he thought possible. The instructors hovered around them as they put them through the standard army dozen, twice. The second time, they pushed them faster, making the relatively simple calisthenic exercises that much tougher. By the end of it, Clyde's arms and shoulders shook uncontrollably, and his vision narrowed dangerously. One recruit quit after he couldn't hold the leaning rest position any longer. He simply collapsed. He cried as he rolled onto his back and gasped, "I quit!" That seemed to start the flow. Two more men quit in quick succession. Clyde looked over at Gil and their eyes locked. "Don't quit," Clyde uttered through clenched teeth. Clyde had pushed his strategy of not pushing and not drawing attention, and Gil had silently signed on. Now he suffered alongside him, and Clyde felt terrible. He'd get him through it if it killed him. And it might.
Recover!
The remaining three did their best to recover quickly.
Attention! Right face! Forward march! Double time!
Time meant nothing to Clyde. He didn't know how long or how far they ran. He concentrated on the next step. He marveled each time his legs didn't collapse beneath him. His mind drifted away, shunning the pain into dark, unknown recesses. His muscles continued to work mechanically, as though on autopilot. The instructors finally stopped and put them through one more session of the Army Dozen. Each time one of them failed to complete a rep adequately, they all did it again, until they all did it correctly. Finally, the disgusted instructor said,
"Recover!"
Each of them shook, not from cold, but from sheer exhaustion. They stood at attention the best they could.
"You men have been half-assing the training. The lieutenant warned you at the beginning about giving 100% all the time. I could kick you out of this program and be completely justified. But I'd rather you quit and save us all a lot of trouble."
He squared up and sighed heavily. His arms rippled as he crossed them and covered the black airborne wings on his tight-fitting t-shirt. He glared at them and continued,
"Consider this a warning. I see any of you not giving 100% out there."
His voice turned to ice.
"You're gone. Understood?"
Clyde couldn't keep the elation from his voice.
"Yes, Sergeant!"
they all screamed simultaneously.
"Cooper, stay here. Rest of you join your section. Don't even think of walking."
They sprinted off like lions chased after them. Clyde's elation turned to ash. He gulped and stood as rigid as his aching body would allow. The sergeant said,
"You're one of the older recruits, Cooper. Some of these men look up to you. I think you're a slacker."
He leaned in close, and Clyde could smell his acidic breath. Clyde didn't budge and continued looking past his face.
The sergeant seethed. "You a slacker, Cooper?"
Clyde lifted his chin and yelled as loud as he could muster,
"No, Sergeant!"
The sergeant straightened and folded his arms across his chest.
"You calling me a liar, Cooper?"
"No, Sergeant!"
The sergeant leaned forward, placing his hands on his knees.
"You know why I didn't just kick you out?"
Clyde wanted to look him in the eye, but continued staring past his shoulder.
"No, Sergeant!"
"'Cause someone wants you out more than I do, and that don't sit well with me."
Clyde didn't know what to say. Had he heard him correctly? He thought better of it, but said anyway,
"Permission to speak freely, Sergeant!"
"Denied!"
The sergeant stood up tall and said,
"Dismissed!"
Clyde wanted to protest, but knew better. He spun and ran back to his section.
"What the hell is he talking about?" he wondered.